It really is wonderful to be here this morning. A very long ways from Vancouver. Friends, because we're from the same city, from Vancouver, from Port Coquitlam. Great to have you. It's a wonderful flight up, and to see the pristine mountains and wilderness. Vancouver is the smallest city I've ever lived in, and so I suppose, they say you can take the boy out of the city, but you can't take the city out of the boy, kind of thing. So, but it's a marvelous thing to be here in Whitehorse and the experience. We were out yesterday exploring the river, and we were on a bridge, and a fox walked right across with us. And we saw a bald eagle yesterday, and just this last night I went to sleep at like 9, and I woke up what I thought was morning, but it was really like only like 11. So I feel like I'm getting an experience, an authentic Whitehorse experience. I had dinner at the salmon and rib, Klondike salmon and rib joint last night. So thank you for your hospitality and warmth, and Norm and Heather, who have just really just been really good to me. So it is wonderful to be here, and we do consider you a part of our ministry in the lives of people in Vancouver's downtown east side. And most of you have probably heard of the downtown east side. It's that infamous, right? And for many people that live in, I'm certain, in Whitehorse, but also throughout D.C., it becomes a place where people that are really challenged and struggling end up getting caught. And they come to Vancouver for a job or to experience a new way of life. And because of a whole host of issues, are caught there. So not only are we ministering to people from Vancouver, but from people all over the West Coast. Mission Possible, we like to say, walks alongside people who are challenged by homelessness and poverty. And the nuance in that is very important. We say we walk alongside people because we believe that hope and transformation is most lasting when it happens from the bottom up and the inside out. It has to happen from within. And so the best work happens when we listen to those who are in need, and we respond not by simply medicating their weaknesses, but by leveraging their strengths. We say that people are challenged by homelessness and poverty because we don't believe that homelessness is a life sentence. There have been many people who, some very quite noteworthy, who have been homeless. And maybe some of you even have experienced homelessness at one time or another in your life. And perhaps you're better because of it. That challenge is actually something that gives you strength today to live on. And so we look at the people that we work with the sense of hope, understanding that their lives can be better, and that there is a way out of the hopelessness. I love the Leonard Cohen song, Anthem, where he talks about a bell that's being rung, and that bell has a big crack in it. And Leonard Cohen says, everything has a crack in it. That's how the light gets in. And so as a people of hope, as a people of the gospel, we understand that all is not lost. That even we talked today in Sunday school about Peter and Paul. Even for Paul, he once was a man of great, an enemy to the faith, but then became one of its greatest messengers. So there's a hope for all of us. Some estimate about 2.5 to 3.5 million North Americans are homeless at any given time. Those are not just people that are single. About a third of those are families. About 60% live in shelters. About 40 to 45% are absolutely homeless on the street. 23% are chronically homeless. 77% of the people who are homeless, including families, it's episodic. It's only temporary. Families, again, make up 23% of the homeless population. 39% are children living under the age of 18. Now, the statistics can tell us about the breadth of the problem, but the picture that we form in our mind is significantly impersonal and distant. Like viewing the pictures of children with bloated bellies in some far-off land. We're moved compassionately to respond with financial gift through prayer. Or like my daughter does every night before she goes to bed, she prays for people who go to bed hungry or are scared or who don't have a home. But even for the most earnest and sincere Christians, we can't help but feel that our compassion is a bit constrained when we think of people who are homeless. That we're not able to really reach the problem or have an impact. And the truth is that many of us have very little, if any, experience with homelessness. And when we think of homelessness, we often think of the things that cause homelessness. We think of mental illness, we think of disability, we think of a loss of the job, affordable housing, violence in the home. But for most of us, our image of homelessness is that guy panhandling on the street with a cup or a hand out looking for a little bit of change to make it through the day. Even though I'm still a young man, I have been ministering on and amongst the streets of large cities for the last 20 years of my life. And I've learned a few things over those years. I've cultivated a kind of a street smarts and some wisdom. I'm still learning. I'm surprised on occasion of what street life can bring to me. But for many of us, the city can be a very scary and pretty intimidating kind of place. It's, of course, not without its challenges, but for those who have eyes to see and those who have ears to hear, the kingdom of God oozes from the cracks of the sidewalks. And when I have opportunity to speak to people, to church groups like yourself or Sunday school classes, people that are curious about the work, likely the first question that I receive from people is, so, anyway, tell me, what is the most appropriate way to respond when somebody is panhandling, when they want a little change? And, you know, I've had probably 100 or so different interactions where people have panhandled, where I've been panhandled, and I've seen the gamut of approaches. You know, I've heard it all. I remember a particular incident when I was about 20 years old and I was living in Washington, D.C. and I was coming home from my job. I was going to school there and I went through Union Station and as a place where you often confront people who are homeless. And a young man, probably a little bit younger than I was, came up and he said to me, hey man, can I have $1.63 for a hamburger? Well, I've heard a lot of panhandling in my day. I've never heard anybody ask me for $1.63. I'm like, that was a really unique ask, right? Like, so I was intrigued. Strange request, but I said, well, you know, I'm going this direction and he wanted $1.63 for the McDonald's as the other direction. Why don't you come with me and we'll stop by the Subway up around the corner where I'll get you a sandwich and at least it can sit down and talk. And I knew that sandwich would cost more than $1.63. So I felt good about myself. And he would, you know, be able to get something. And I wouldn't necessarily be contributing to something that I didn't want to contribute to. And he said, all I want, man, is $1.63. That's all I need. I don't want a Subway. I want a hamburger. And we got into a little bit of a heated debate. And after it was all said and done, I felt pretty indignified, and he felt pretty indignified. I wish I had just given him the $1.63. I wonder if you've ever had an experience like that. Maybe not exactly. But an experience what it feels like to want to help somebody but not know how. Or to be walking down the city street and to see somebody who's, you know, looking for a little bit of change. What are the feelings that you often feel in a situation like that? Anybody want to venture a shout one out? What kinds of feelings do you have in those moments? Unsure? Yeah. Sorrow? Compassion? Scared? Yeah, some fear? Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, you're doing the math. You know, you're wondering what the right thing to do is, right? There's an uncertainty. Maybe a little guilt, a little shame, you know? Some anxiety. Well, when you talk to people like me who have been around it for a long time, you run into three schools of thought when confronting somebody that's panhandling. The first school of thought is you give. And I think this is a really biblical, you know, response. You know, Jesus said if somebody asks you for something, you give it to them, right? And I've had lots of experiences where this is a really great way to respond. And some people are just, you know, a little bit of change. You know, what's a little bit of change out of my pocket, right? Some people say you don't give. Some people say, like in my line of work, I give at the office, right? I already did that compassion thing today. I helped somebody else today. I don't really need to give to you. I did it. And so you just kind of move on. Other people say it depends on the circumstance, right? And you got to kind of discern in the moment. And sometimes you give and sometimes you don't give. I mean, I'm guessing that some of you have experienced all these things. Well, I have to admit that I've never really found the answer, the right way to respond. And perhaps there's not a right way to respond. That the discomfort that we feel is actually inevitable and maybe even illuminating. This discomfort that all of us feel, I think, is really the result of the social distance between us and the people we encounter. The inability to make sense of and sit down and hear one another's stories, right? It's difficult, maybe impossible, to close that social distance between us and them in a mere moment. And we're filled with our own anxieties and our own agendas. I mean, we're going somewhere and they're there and we've got things to do and people to see and it kind of interrupts our rhythm. Tom Neese, who is a mentor of mine, a pastor, a Nazarene pastor, and pastor of a church in Washington, D.C. back in the 60s. It was a time right after the riots, after Martin Luther King Jr. was shot, and he pastored a big prestigious church in that town, and he actually left that church and moved just a few blocks down the street to a very struggling and troubled neighborhood and began a ministry called Community of Hope that works with homeless families and provides housing and medical care. And Tom, that ministry grew and became so famous in what it was doing in terms of helping people that he was invited to the White House one day to meet with President Carter and some of his staff to talk about some of the urban problems. And he met there and then left and walked just a few blocks to 14th Street, where he jumped back on a bus. And while he was there at that bus stop, he met a woman who asked him, "Hey, would you like a date?" Which is not an uncommon kind of question that you have when you interact with unfortunately, in our communities. And he was, if you knew Tom, he was kind of embarrassed. And he said, "Oh, no, I'm just getting on the bus." And it would have been unusual to see a white gentleman in this community. But he had, again, a conversation with this woman, And she got on bus with him, and they continued this conversation as they headed back up to the neighborhood. And in fact, she lived in the neighborhood that Tom lived in. And through this conversation, they got to know each other. And I can't remember how it all ended, but at the end of it all, they somehow connected, and she was connected with the life of their church. And through it all, the kind of thing that only God knows how to do happened, right? Somehow they broke through the social distance. He broke through the social distance by seeing the human potential in this woman who was just perceived by those people in the world as a prostitute who was worthless on the street. Tom once said that the work of the gospel is in part holding together the distance between the powerful and the powerless. Oftentimes our hands too small and our arms too short, but nevertheless, it's our call to close that gap. Jesus and those early disciples were doing just that. They're always standing in the gap, meddling with the social boundaries, closing the social distance between the haves and the have-nots, the religious and the non-religious, the broken, and those of us who just pretend not to be broken. I want to read you Acts chapter 3, the story of Peter and John. One day, Peter and John were going up to the temple at the hour of prayer, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And a man lame from birth was being carried in, and the people would lay him daily at the gate of the temple called the Beautiful Gate, so that he could ask for alms from those who were entering the temple. He was there begging. When he saw Peter and John about to go up into the temple, he asked them for alms. And Peter looked intently at him, as did John, and they said, "Look at us." And he fixed his attention on them, expecting to receive something from them. Peter said, "I have no silver or gold, but what I give you, I give you. What I have, I give to you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, stand up and walk." And he took him by the right hand and he raised him up, and immediately his feet and his ankles were made strong. Jumping up, he stood and began to walk, and immediately they entered the temple together, walking and leaping and praising God. All the people saw him walking and praising God, and they recognized him as the one who used to sit and ask for alms at the Beautiful Gate of the temple, and they were filled with wonder and amazement at what had happened to him. It's the word of the Lord. This story continues to challenge me and my work in the downtown East Side. We talk about three things. We talk about people, purpose, and paycheck. We work with people who are challenged with homelessness and poverty. I talked a little bit about that. We help people regain a sense of dignity and purpose through meaningful work. We have a community center where people come in and they can get meals or help with basic assistance and needs and find housing and get their mail there. They're somebody there that cares. But more than that, we become a community where we not only see people as people who have needs, but we try to help enlist them into the work of making the community a better place. Because when you're not serving, but you're serving others, you're not being served, but you're serving others, you regain a sense of dignity and purpose for yourself that gives you opportunity in life. And so people become members of Mission Possible by simply stating that they're going to invest in themselves and others and volunteer a few hours a month, and off they go to the races, and we see things start to change from there. We talk about paycheck because, well, in our community, everybody gets a paycheck once a month on a Wednesday at the same time. Everybody gets in line and for their check. Having done nothing to really earn it except be labeled by society as a person of need, in a community like that, A paycheck that's earned with the sweat off your brow and the calluses of your hands is a powerful platform for life change. And so we've started businesses. We have a maintenance company that does pressure washing and graffiti removal and cleans awnings and windows and streets and does painting and landscaping. And we employ many, many people. We employ over 30 people in this business and another business, which is a security company, where we have a contract with the Local Business Improvement Association to provide community safety teams that assist people on the street. And we have an art center where people, maybe they're not able to work a full-time job, but they are creative and they come in and they paint and they carve and they sculpt and they do pottery and we give them little microloans where they can buy a little bit of material and make something and then they can sell that work and experience the dignity of being able to create something and earn a wage. It's a beautiful thing. So let me give you some context to this passage in Acts. The community of Jesus, early in its years, is growing rapidly. And Dr. Luke, the writer of Luke, is the one who also gives us the story in Acts. And he wants to retell the story of those early days of the church. And I suppose he could have picked any story. He talked about how the Spirit had been sent upon the church and how they were able to understand one another across cultures. And he talks about, in chapter 2, about how they held everything in common. And the Lord was adding to their number daily, right? And if you could pick any story to illustrate exactly what was happening, he picks this one to tell first, and it really becomes a story that animates the whole beginning of the book of Acts. And as you read this, and I invite you to go home and read what happens after this, because everything begins to snowball from here. It's a watershed moment that propels the ministry of Peter and John. Now, up until now, the disciples of Jesus had been ministering mostly amongst a tight grip of religious insiders. But now the reach of the gospel begins to crescendo, where the circle of who gets the benefits of the kingdom of God is beginning to increase. No longer Greek or Jew, male or female, slave or free, right? Everyone is beginning to receive the good news and able to lay claim to its benefits. And in this story, most of the focus is on this man who was born lame from birth, we're told. In other words, it really wasn't his fault at all that he was disabled. It wasn't because of his sin or the sin of his parents, right? By virtue of his disability, then, he was excluded from the community of worship. He was excluded from the healthcare system, right? Because if you needed to get healed, you had to go to the temple, and he wasn't allowed in the temple. And by that fact, he was excluded from God. Unclean. Simply because of his visible challenge. And it's as if this was how the system was set up. And it was seen to be just and equitable. Every day, someone, some kind-hearted person or people would carry him to the gates of the temple. And they would lay him down near the temple where he could beg for his keep. And as he laid there, the good religious folk, the compassionate people who were on their way to church in their good clothes, with their nice families, would then give him a few coins as they walked in as a way to help him survive. Survived on the mercy of the worshipers. Crumbs off their tables. The good and compassionate church folk. Then here comes Peter and John. Now as they approach the lame man, they're both expecting the same reaction, right? You know you've seen it, right? the guy on the street looks pitiful and really struggling, and he's playing his part, and you walk by and trying not to look, right? Seeing them out of the corner of their eye, trying to avoid eye contact. Maybe you throw a coin, maybe you don't. That's the traditional exchange. But something different happens this time. Peter and John, they break through. It says that they break the rules. The scripture said that they looked at him intently, which is unusual, right? And then they said, "Look at us." And he fixed his attention on them, and they had a very human moment, right? They looked one another square in the eye. They realized one another's humanity, one another's giftedness, one another's struggles, as well as one another's worth. And then they offered him a hand up. Not just a handout. And immediately he was healed. Immediately he was healed. His ankles remained made strong. And then the first thing that they do after he was healed is they head straight into the temple. And this was no insignificant thing, right? Now that he was healed, he was clean enough to go into the temple. They bounced through the beautiful gate. And all were amazed, scripture said. Included, he was included as if he had belonged all along, you know? Now, let me remind you, there was no overt spiritual transformation here, right? The man hadn't said a sinner's prayer. He was simply gifted with the good news of the gospel, the care and love of the Lord. A really beautiful thing, right? And who knows what this man was thinking all of those years he was sitting outside the temple. Surely he thought something about the people that were walking in. Surely he had an idea of this God whom they were worshiping. Who knows what was in his mind? And his exuberance as he moves through the gates gives you a picture into his mindset, right? Gratitude, thanksgiving. Well, this sets off the chain of reaction. Of course, the people and the priests were upset. They thought they brought John and Peter in for questioning. And then later on, and you can read this, but I love what Peter does. It's almost as if he begins to equate the beggar to Jesus. And he starts talking about how they had rejected Jesus and that he was the key to new life. He was the stone in which the builder had cast out that would become the chief cornerstone that he would build his church. And it's almost as if Jesus is saying, "You have kicked out this man, this lame man. Now he will become the chief cornerstone on which I build my church." The lame, the broken, the struggling, the hurting. They would become the cornerstone of God's kingdom. And this is the story of the Church of the Nazarene. Now, Church of the Nazarene, we're a pretty small group of folk around the world, but we have the church in Whitehorse. That there is the name Church of the Nazarene. Church of Nazarene was started in Los Angeles, in Skid Row, of all places. The founder, Phineas Brzee and J.T. Whitney, they named it after a night of prayer. They said, "We're going to call this the Church of the Nazarene, not solely to identify with Jesus who was from Nazareth, but the place from which he was from." Nazareth was placed on the wrong side of the tracks. The place of the despised and the despicable and the cast out. They said, we will call it the Church of Nazarene so that we would never forget that we're the church of the people and for the people, for the lowly and toiling masses of the world. That we're the church of the despised. And this is the story of the emergence of the gospel, right? Every culture throughout history, it's not the conquering stuff of conquistadors and crusaders, but the quiet and subversive movement of God's kingdom that begins amongst the least of these, amongst the castaways and the vagabonds, the rejects, the poor and the persecuted. The church at its best is at its best when it finds the imagination to close the social distance created by the dominant culture and religious propriety. It goes to the margins to walk alongside people in need, not simply to feel sorry for them, but to experience life with them, to walk along with them. We, the church, so often, like the world, create groups, in groups and out groups, but Jesus and his disciples and the powerful movement of God's kingdom is always creating a come on in group. I must admit, this is a challenging reminder for me, even a pastor who spends his days on the streets of the downtown East Side. Of course, I'm the rich man in my neighborhood. And Jesus said it'd be hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom. It's so easy for me to play the part of the fixer rather than the friend. So much easier to create barriers by defining the deficits and disabilities, failing to recognize the assets and capacities and gifts and talents. As followers of Jesus, our first move must always be to look people into the in their eyes, to sit with them, to listen, to receive them, to bless them, to welcome and include them, to honor them. And so here we are. People of God sitting outside the gate of beautiful Whitehorse, right? Wherever your community is, hoping to break through like Peter and John. And it doesn't always happen in an instant, right? But sometimes it happens. It happens, I want to share with you a story about a lady named Linda that it happened to at Mission Possible. Or
God has beauty in all of us, and we all have assets to give, and we all have a lot of contribution. As long as there's somebody out there willing to give that person a chance. I got gas in a pop bottle, and I didn't realize I had gas in myself. I thought I was just smelling it, you know, from the pop bottle. Well, I went and lit a smoke, and from the fumes, it just combusted, and I burnt over 80% of my body. And then the ambulance drivers came, and the fire department, they all came. They loaded me up in the ambulance, so they put two IVs in my feet, and from there, I woke up 2.5 months later. The hospital says that they get one miracle a year, and I was that miracle that year.
You know, Vancouver tells the tale of two cities, the powerful, the powerless. The glory and the shame. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world, and yet when you come into the downtown East Side, it's almost like going into another world. The downtown East Side is a place that's really challenged by homelessness and poverty, people that are addicted to drugs and alcohol, people that are dealing with disability and mental health issues. Mission Possible provides basic street-level care to people experiencing homelessness and poverty in the downtown East Side. We really believe that building deep relationships with people is the best opportunity to move them towards life change.
My company shut down that I was working for. I shut down, it went out of business. I was bored at home, so I thought, well, you know, I should go volunteer somewhere and go help out. I want to go volunteer at a place where I felt helped me out. And the first place that popped in my mind was Mission Possible.
I met Linda at a breakfast at Mission Possible. Just started talking with her, and I found out very quickly that she was very interested in trying to find something to do, to get out and to begin to engage in the world again.
So I came the next day, and then the next day, and the next day, and I just never really left, to be honest. The very first day I started volunteering, I've been coming 5 days a week.
What makes Linda different is that she has a capacity, has that capacity within her that she's been able to move beyond herself and not only just worry about herself and her own survival, but the survival of her kids and the survival of her friends, people that she's learned to love and care for. And she's almost seen as a mother down here, you know. People look to her for advice. They look to her for help. They look to her for encouragement and for love. And she offers it freely to them.
I don't consider them clients or, you know, I consider them family and friends. And it's a lot easier to help a family member out than it is to help a client out.
In weakness, God's power is made manifest, right? And, I mean, that's what you see when you see Linda rolling along in her wheelchair down the street in the downtown east side. Not somebody that's weak, but somebody that's powerful.
I really believe that God has something for all of us to do, and mine was to help people because I do understand struggles. I've been there. Maybe not the exact same struggles that they're going through. Like, I've never been an addict to drugs and alcohol, but I understand what it's like to get up every day and struggle.
We're all wired for love. And it's when we're able to see each other as we truly are, as God sees us, is when we're able to tap into the love that God has gifted us.
And that's God's creation. That's how He's made our world, right? But He also works through individuals the same way. You know, through their personality, you know. You may not see it by looking at them as you can the mountains and the rainforest and stuff like that. That type of beauty you can see just by looking at, right? People's beauty, you've got to get to know them to see their beauty.
So the real work of the gospel is outside the gate, outside the four walls of the church building and our comfortable relational networks. This is seed work for sure. Just like Jesus said, the seed of the mustard seed, you know, the mustard seed was the smallest seed in the garden, but it has potential to become the biggest tree. Our efforts to close the gap might look humble and unimpressive. As humble as simply treating a stranger with friendship and dignity. But these small and important movements are the seeds of transformation, and who knows what might happen. We are the people of God, right? The light of the gospel and the hope of Jesus can penetrate the deepest and darkest of places in our world. It can change the hardest of hearts. So my prayer for us is that we step out in courage, and into the adventure that God has for us, and that we would only take a chance outside the gate to share His love. Thanks be to God.